Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good Monday morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Lexington, Kentucky.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona. You're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for February 6th, 2012, episode 331, sponsored by Omega Alpha. Good morning, Horse World.
Yep, it's Monday.
All right, let's take it from the top again.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. I'm trying to get through all of these commercials here from the Super Bowl because I unfortunately did not get to watch the Super Bowl, and neither did my husband because we were driving home from the horse trials yesterday at Galway Downs. But we did listen to it scratchily on AM radio, but it did not let me see the commercials. So we got to get into a little commercial talk about that, Glenn.
Yes, we do. I know that we have our favorites, and I have an opinion about overall, but we'll get into that. I want to hear first, after we do our daily winnings, how you made out over the weekend. And by the way, that husband of yours deserves a gold star. He missed the Super Bowl to go to a horse show.
I know, but you know what? He was still mad because his team, the 49ers, lost to the Giants 2 weeks ago to get to the Super Bowl. So he had made it clear that if his team was in the Super Bowl or had been in the Super Bowl, there was no way he would have been there. So he was still mad at the Giants for beating his 49ers to take him there. So, yeah, no, it was crystal clear that that's the only way he came with me, was he was mad at the team.
And then the Giants win again, so that must have made him doubly upset. I'm sure he was rooting for New England at that point.
He, you know, I don't think he cared up until the last play, and he was like, "Darn, darn it, darn!" And they threw the bomb into the end zone, and he's like, "How did I not catch it?" And he's listening to it on the radio, and he's screaming at the radio. So I think he was a little more emotionally invested than he anticipated.
And the guy didn't catch it because he was surrounded by the entire New York Giants team was in the end zone at that point. So
Wow. There
was no way he was coming out with that ball. But anyway, let's find out from Jennifer what's on our show today, and then we'll talk a little bit about your show over the weekend.
On today's Omega Alpha Monday edition, we will be ruining Glenn's lunch 2 days early this week with animal ophthalmologist Dr. Joanna Norman. She'll be here this morning to bring all things eyeball into focus for us horse folks. And another ESMA newbie finalist will be joining us today. Carday and Martin's communication admin, James Watts, will be coming to us live from across the pond for a little chit-chat about how awesome it is to be an ESMA finalist. And, of course, all of the news and weekend misadventures you've come to expect from Mondays will be here as well. So stay tuned.
Thank you, Jennifer. My daily winnie goes out to a listener by the name of Linda, who wrote to us over the weekend, and I thought it would be a good training lesson to talk about her little post on Facebook. She said, "I'm listening to the podcast from last Monday and Tuesday, and I'm getting lots of echo sound. Is this your recording or my downloading? Your loyal listener." Well, and then she also said that we were talking fast. Well, the reason that happens, if you're listening on an iPod, I remind everybody, there isn't a button where you can control the speed of the podcast that you're listening to. So if you want to listen to Jamie and I talking like this and you want to get through the show in about half the time, you can. However, most people prefer to listen to it in one at times. You'll see a little button there that says one times, two times, and half time. You can also listen to Jamie and I talking like this throughout the show if you do half time. But you can get through the show in double time by hitting the two times button. But that's probably why you were hearing echo sounds and we were talking really fast like chipmunks.
Can I get through the show double time?
You could. You could try. Go ahead. Let's see your daily Winnie double time. By the way, Linda went on to say, I live in the mountains in the panhandle of Idaho with my two horses out my side back door. I listen to all the shows when I'm out doing barn chores. Thank you for putting on such a great show. Well, thank you for listening, Linda, and you're my daily Winnie. All right, double time.
I've got two, so I can't do a double time. It's Monday morning. I'm exhausted. I'm not doing double time. Maybe tomorrow. So my first one is to Tom Rittenhouse, our listener, who says he has a day off today. 9 months that I might get to listen live. I'll try to keep it a secret so no one can mess up my plans. So potentially Tom Rittenhouse is listening to us live for like the first time ever. So welcome to the show, Tom. Man Nation.
Good morning, Tom.
Especially when we talk a little football. But here, that is why my next Daily Winnie is so awesome. And I have no idea who it was, actually. I probably could look it up online, but it was the announcer at Galway Downs. It was so funny because at one point, you know, you can tell there's like not that many husbands that were at the horse show this weekend. Not too terribly many of them, but the ones that were kind of all were walking around like Chad, I can't believe I'm not going to be watching the Super Bowl. I can't believe I'm not watching the Super Bowl. Even my trainer's husband was like, I haven't been to a Super Bowl party in 12 years because of this horse show. Apparently, Galway Downs is always on Super Bowl Sunday, and the announcer was like, and everybody, okay, we're going to go ahead and get started this morning. First ride going on course. We're going to try to get everybody done by the Super Bowl. Oh, if that's your thing, I mean, probably isn't really anybody's thing that's here, which is so funny. He's like, yeah, if you're here, you don't care. So my daily Winnie goes to all the men and the announcer that were at the horse trial this weekend that all missed the Super Bowl. Thank you, guys.
I've been that guy. I know what it's like. Oh, and Tom just wrote, I'm here. Well, good morning, Tom. Thank you for joining us. So you texted me. All I know about this weekend is the two little texts you sent me, and it sounds like you and Jet had quite the roller coaster ride this weekend.
Why is my horse so bipolar? You know, I don't get it, and we all have different reasons. Everybody that was around me has come up with a theory on why my horse behaved like he did, be it he really got stressed out and he had some ulcers. Here's what I think it was, so here's what happened. I get there, he's being great, I go school, show jumping, he was awesome. This was on Friday, then Saturday the competition started, and get up early Saturday morning, and I had to go do dressage. You go out to the arena, and the little dressage arena, and he put in a really nice test. You know, he went out and he warmed up well. He put in a really nice test. The judge that we were with did not score generously at all. He was not impressed with any eventer's dressage. The lowest score in my whole division, or that I saw, he didn't score anybody below a 35, it seemed. And I ended up with a 39. And a 39 in any other horse trial, I would have been in like 20th place. This one, I was sitting in 8th with a 29. I thought, well, that's pretty good. You know, that I'll take that, even though I was not happy with my 5s and 6s and maybe like 1-7. So not excited about that, but whatever. Everybody, it was all comparable. You know, everybody had bad scores. He was just not generous at all with any sort of dressage score. So I'm like, okay, well, let's go into show jumping. So show jumping.
They need to go to findajudge.com.
They really do. Exactly. Find a judge.com. Find a betterjudge.com.
Yeah, there you go.
jerk.
One that actually understands the Venters are not dressage riders.
No. Well, exactly. And then the thing is, he needs to find a better, find a judge.com to find somebody who didn't yell out six, five, six. I mean, we get all
while
hear
you're
him
doing
yelling
your...
out. Yes!
Really? Oh, no.
Yes! It was horrible. I'm like, she's sitting right next to you. You don't have to yell five,
six.
She
was doing that just to piss you off.
Oh, I found it really distracting, but I ignored him, and I was like, whatever. And we went ahead and put it a good test. Well, then we go down the show jumping.
Before you go on, that is a confidence builder. You're out there, and you really want eights and maybe a nine occasionally for the really good. Seven, eight would be great, but when he's hollering out, three, four, that's a confidence builder. That just makes you want to continue doing a terrific test.
I know. It was pretty distracting. The girl who wrote after me, my friend Christine, was so mad. She's like, I couldn't even hear myself think about my test. All I kept hearing was five, six, six. She was not.
I've never had a judge. Jennifer, have you ever had a judge that did that?
What, that was a loud talker?
That screamed out that she...
No. My embarrassment only happened when the scores went up on the wall with a big magic marker. And then I would, I'd put a bag over my head.
Yeah, I was hoping he was yelling out sex. At least something exciting, not sex. Ugh, sex, sex, sex. I'm like, that I understand. It's cool. But don't yell out six and five. Ugh, it's horrible. So
you need to lower your standards, Jamie. When I was eventing, yeah. I was thrilled to get a six. Woohoo, sixes!
Oh, yeah. No, I don't want sixes. I want sevens and eights. I've never gotten a nine, so I don't know. So going to show jumping, I was pretty pleased sitting in eighth place. You know, I'm in California. This is a big deal. There were some really nice horses. It's like a broken record, what I'm going to tell you, because it sounds so familiar to the last time. But Galway Downs is a racetrack. It is a big Galway Downs. I mean, there's a racetrack. We stayed in thoroughbred barns, you know, with the shed row around them. And it was very much a racetrack facility that they have built around, you know, they've got the cross-country course all the way around it and arenas through it. But the main centerpiece is a racetrack. And directly next to the racetrack, which has the starting gates sitting right there, is the show jump warm-up. And... my God, when is he going to figure out he doesn't have to do that anymore? But I get him down there, and I walk him down the hill. And we had been here yesterday, but I don't know what happened. He just all of a sudden, like, stopped and stared at the starting gates on the racetrack and froze. I'm like, oh, dude, this is going to be bad. So I go to turn him, and he just lost it. After that, and I don't know if it was that, I don't know what it was, because he'd been there the day before, but he just became a nightmare. I thought he was getting better. I was pretty frustrated because I became that guy again, that guy who has to apologize as your horse goes by somebody else's horse and leaps in the air and bucks and then spooks their horse. I had to apologize for being that guy because there was a crowd standing there and I tried to get him to calm down and he ran sideways and the crowd had to scatter. You know, I mean, it was it was all that in a bag of chips.
When the
I'm
crowd has to scatter for you and it's show jumping, that's bad.
Yeah. And show jumping warm up. Okay, this is how bad it was. So we were that guy, and thank God my coach Barb got down there. I don't know when I became so reliant on a trainer, but my God, I can't do anything without her telling me to do it. So she gets down there, and I'm like, what do I do? It's so bad. You know, I'm so frustrated. I feel like just quitting. She's like, just go jump and turn, jump and turn, jump and turn. And we got him to where he was not propping and jumping like crazy and bucking afterwards because I could turn him afterwards so he'd stop bucking. I mean, I was bucking, for God's sake. So it's time to go on the show.
Oh, man. And were there other people in the warm-up with you?
Oh, there was like 1,000 people. There were people there that were jumping the jumps backwards, which is cause for elimination. It was so crazy and dangerous in there, and I was not helping. I was definitely adding.
You were called, you know the seven words we're not allowed to say on radio? You were called every one of those during that 5-minute period of time.
Yeah, except for I warmed up for like 20 because he was so bad. I kept going. They were like, they looked at me and started giving, was like, you can go later. It's fine. You don't have to go now. You don't have to go now.
You were that girl.
There was a point where actually I heard the crowd of people standing, because warm-up was right next to where you go in, and I heard them gasping at one point. I was like, oh, my God. This is so bad. And then,
you rode the box, right? You didn't fall off?
I did not fall off. I rode the box. I definitely rode the box. Now, I haven't described to you my show jumping round yet, so let's just move on. Past the warm-up, it was a disaster. It was really bad. So I go into my show jumping, and they call my name. They're like, you ready? I'm like, I guess. Usually he's better when he's by himself. So, and he schooled this yesterday. So I take him in, and I had already done my course walk, and I go cantering around the side, and I hit fence number one. Boom, he nails it. And at this point, he's jumping really nice, but he's jumping really, really big. Fence number one, done. Fence number two, left turn, coming up the hill. Fence number two, he tapped it. He rubbed it, which is really good for him because then he's going to be very careful. Fence number three, he cleared by 2 feet. Fence number four. Fence number
four. My favorite number.
It's my least favorite number, Glenn, and I'll tell you why. Fence number four was a giant airy oxer that I was galloping down the hill towards, trying to canter, mind you, but galloping down the hill towards, and kind of at the bottom of the slope. And he just decides he doesn't like it. He does not like it, even though he had already jumped the big black one. He jumped the big scary one. This is just a regular, standard, big, airy oxer, and he's coming down to it. And you want to talk about a crowd gasping, because my horse, three strides in front of it, the third stride coming up to it, he takes a complete canter stride to the left. I pull him back. The second stride, he takes a complete canter stride to the right. I pull him back. The third canter stride, he stops, and I kick him, and then he jumps it from a standstill.
Oh!
Well, so it's like left, right, stop, jump, and the jump was this exuberant, oh, my God, I'm going downhill jumping at this thing. I can't stop. I'm going to have to jump over it, and he lands in a heap on his feet on the other side. However, I land to the right of the saddle. And fortunately, I had my reins. I had no stirrups. All I could do was grab the left rein and pull. So I am sitting not on the saddle. I am hanging off. My butt is about where my stirrup is. You remember that video with Karen O'Connor hanging on for dear life and she gets her? That was me.
Chad didn't videotape this, did he? By the way,
this is on video, my friend, and they are making a CD and sending it to me because this was apparently one of the best saves that they've seen in a while. Hence the crowd gasping yet again. So I proceed to have my left rein hang on it, pull him in a circle, find my stirrups, get back up, and continue on course. I mean, come on. Round of applause for doing that.
At this point, you were still on course. You weren't eliminated. You were still on course.
I was still on course because I was just right after that fourth. Now, however, they do penalize you quite heavily for doing a circle in show jumping, which is what I did. I did continue on with the rest of the course, and he jumped everything about 3 feet over it. So I cannot wait to see these show jumping pictures because they're going to be ridiculous. The horse had no problem. Huh?
Well, it's pretty clear that he's just at too low a level.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody had said that I really need to start challenging him a little bit because I'm like, it's not a physical challenge. This is not a physical challenge. This is an emotional challenge for him. That's it. So I get him through the whole course. He jumps everything like it's 10 feet tall again. And we finished the rest of the course clear. And because of the circle, I ended up accruing 4 penalty points. And in show jumping, I accrued 19 time faults. That is almost 20 seconds too slow. So,
you could have walked the horse around the course.
I really could have. I could have trotted the whole course and not had that many time penalties. So I end up going from eighth place into, like, you know, 17th or 16th or something like that. And so I was like, well, whatever, it'll be fine. You know, my first time in California, he hasn't competed since October. I better be just nice to him. So considerably nervous for cross country. I should have known better because he went out on cross country and was a rock star. He was good in the warm-up. He was fine when I took him out. He was, I'm telling you, he's bipolar. No bucking, no plunging, no rearing, no spinning, no running into crowds. He just went out, warmed up. I took him to the start box. He went out of the start box and jumped everything perfect, including he's a little funny about water. So I was supposed to bring him back to the trot so we could slowly go into the water. He pulled me into the water at a dead gallop. I had to slow him down in the water. He was, like, that excited about it. So, clear cross country.
Have you considered a change of career? Maybe steeple chasing?
I don't know. What is there where you can just run in a field by yourself?
Steeple chasing.
Is that a sport?
Well, steeple chasing. Well, that, you're with other horses, though, there. Fox hunting, maybe.
Yeah. There's other horses there. There's no sport where he could run in a field by himself unless I just turn him out. You know? So he's going to have to get over it.
Well, I'm looking at the scores here, though. You ended up in ninth place, and you had no time penalties, and you had no penalties at all in cross country. And really, you know, you were in eighth place after dressage, so you only dropped a place. So that wasn't bad at all. Not bad.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you look at
the
scores here, and I'm taking a look at the scores here, and, you know, it wasn't bad.
Yeah, ending up with 60-something penalty points is not great. That is not awesome. However, there was a considerable amount of people that did not finish or had refusals and all that. So I did do a little bit better than some of the other people in the division, and I'm just going to have to – he's just going to have to keep going, keep doing it. And he is now going to be on ulcer guard every time he leaves the property.
Now – we have to give a shout out to Madison Kaufman on holiday, who won. She in your group?
Yes, she is in my group. She was stabled next to me. Her horse is awesome. She actually broke the horse. She did everything by herself. So she started that horse and came in first with that one. And then she was did her first training level with a horse she bred and raised, and came in fourth place. So she had a great weekend. Madison Kaufman was amazing. Christine, my other girlfriend, ended up in fifth. Barb ended up coming in second in prelim. It was just a really good weekend for my barn. My friend Stephanie came in third. You know, it was a great weekend for everybody but me. I was that guy. It just nowhere.
And Jennifer and I's favorite name, if those are listening on Friday, we read all the names of the horses in Jamie's division because we were killing time. And our favorite horse name came in second. Denver's Jovial Lass, ridden by Nancy Reed, came in second. So.
How is that your favorite name? Denver's,
I don't know. We just kind of thought that name was kind of cool. Denver's Jovial Lass. Well, congratulations for getting through the bucking session without coming off. You would have won the 8 seconds. You would have been done very well in a rodeo. Maybe that's a new career.
I think you're right. That's a good idea.
Those horses make a lot of money, rodeo horses. And you obviously can ride the bucks, so you should be. They make lots of money too. Now the broken parts, you have to just overlook that. But you're going to get those anyway at this rate, so you might as well just go do the rodeo. You can wear the cowboy hat. You can wear chaps. You can look all cool.
Thanks, Glenn. You're so supportive. I mean, you're just there to help me. It's awesome.
I am. I am there for you, Jamie. I am there for the excitement. Speaking of excitement, let's talk a little bit about Super Bowl commercials. So you watched them all this morning online, and Jennifer, if you can post a link to all the ads off of YouTube, I have it in the show notes. That would be great. Well, we watched the entire football game. It's probably the first entire football game I've watched all season. And, of course, when you come to the commercials during a Super Bowl game, everybody goes, shh, 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 commercials. It's the only time ever in the year that somebody does that. So you watch the commercials.
True.
I got to say, most of the time I went, oh, that was lame. But there were a few commercials that I thought were pretty good. I didn't think it was up to the standards of the past as an overall bunch, but I thought there was some that was pretty good. So what was your favorite commercial?
Well, the first of all, let's just say that the game was really good.
Yeah.
I know
game was
that
really
you
good.
You are not really
pro.
Yeah, it was pretty exciting. I would have to say that this is going to sound really stupid, but because I just watched them all online this morning and clicked on a couple of them, I had to say that there was a bunch of them that I thought was funny. I thought the Doritos baby where they're slinging it, she winds it up and slings it forward and grabs the Doritos bag was funny. I thought the Jerry Seinfeld, that was probably the best acting he's ever done, which is trying to get the new car from the guy. I mean, he's a terrible actor, self-proclaimed terrible actor, and he was actually good at that. The Matthew Broderick, Ferris Bueller's Day Off one, I thought that one was really good.
I think I missed that
one. Oh, it was funny. They kind of redid Ferris Bueller's with him taking the day off, and it was funny. The John Stamos, I laughed out loud. Where he's feeding the pretty girl. He's feeding her yogurt. And he goes to give her a spoonful of yogurt.
Oh, yes.
He won't let her have it. He won't let her have it. And finally she headbutts him and takes it. That was awesome.
You thought that. I just walked away from that one going, okay. That one I didn't think was funny.
I like that yogurt too. So maybe. But by far, the funniest one that I saw in the whole setup here was The Voice, where it is, you know, The Voice is a new TV show coming on, and there you got Christina Aguilera who's flipping around the room because they hear somebody singing in the shower upstairs, and they're in a hotel. And then all of a sudden, like, Blake Shelton comes in and he lassos her, and then Adam Levine from Maroon 5, who's another judge for The Voice, jumps down, and they get in, like, this huge fight, and then CeeLo Green comes down, and then they all run up to the hotel room to see whose voice this is that is just magical coming through the whole hotel from the shower. And Betty White walks out.
Yes.
Oh, my God. And she's like, I was hoping that somebody would finally notice me for my voice and not my body. And then you see her go, eyes up here, boys. Eyes up here. And she's in a bathrobe. Oh, my God. That was so funny. That's awesome.
Betty White is making more money over the last 5 years than she's made in the previous 85 years. She is just on fire.
She is awesome. So, by far, that was my favorite commercial. The Betty White Betty White in the shower. Eyes up here, boys. Eyes up here. Okay.
after our show last week where we talked about favorite trucks, remember we had that list and we talked about trucks. I have to say my favorite commercial was the end of the world commercial with Chevy with the Silverado. The one where you see the end of the world and you see this Silverado driving through and everything's destroyed and there's destruction everywhere. And these, like, four or five guys meet up all driving their Silverados at a place. And then one guy's eating Twinkies. And they say, well, where's Fred or Bob? I forget what his name was. They say, where's Fred? And they say, oh, he was driving a Ford. He didn't make it. I thought that was hilarious. I did think that was pretty good. Now, Ford was not happy with that commercial. And they came out. And they actually, in the week ahead, there's been this war going on between Ford and GM about this commercial. They were asking GM to pull the commercial because they kept saying Fords have been rated higher in dependability than any Chevy has ever been rated and blah, blah, blah. And they just kept going on, and they were sniping back, and the CEOs were going after each other. It's been a battle. Well, GM, stood by their 2012 commercial saying it will not remove the ad from its sites. And this is what they said. Get this. The chief global marketing officer said this. We stand by our claims of the commercial that the Silverado is the most dependable, longest running, blah, blah, blah. It's a good humor ad. And what they said is that if the end of the world comes this year and the Aztecs or Mayans were right and we were wrong, we will apologize then. So that's what they came out and basically said was.
That was their response. Like,
that was their response.
We'll apologize. Oh my gosh, that means it is war. It's like when you are running for office and finally, like, somebody goes negative, it is on. They're going to be all negative ads from now on.
I was shocked because you don't usually see, by the way, every auto company that makes a car was had an ad in the Super Bowl last night. They obviously don't protect their sponsors a whole lot, but that was interesting. That was a good ad. I thought, did you see the Geico ad with the diet by teenager, where the three teenage girls were, every time the guy went to eat something, they were like, oh, gross. Did you see that one?
No, I did not. I did not.
That was towards the beginning of the Super Bowl. That was pretty good. I thought the Elton John Pepsi commercial was interesting, but I thought it would have been better if Elton had been a queen and not a king. Just saying. And then the Doritos Missing Cat commercial. Did you see the one with the dog and the missing cat?
Yes, that was disturbing. I thought, I'm like, that evil creature. Because I have a cat now. I would have thought it was funny if I didn't have a cat.
I thought that was fun. I did think that.
I like the little Eskimo and the Suzuki with all the sled dogs. And he comes home and the wife's like, where's the sled? He's like, I traded it in. I like that one.
All right, I guess that's enough. We want to know, Jennifer posted our question of the day online, what was your favorite Super Bowl ad? And Rick Conley has chimed in, has to be the M&M's commercial. I didn't like the M&M's commercial too much, Rick. Sorry about that. He said, oh, and then, of course, there was the one, we actually had one Bud commercial with the horses in, and that was the end of Prohibition commercial. I don't know if you saw that one or not, but it was kind of lame. And that is actually what happened, and that's how he got started with horses pulling the wagons, was at the end of Prohibition. He actually bought these horses to deliver as quickly as he could to all the bars to get the beer out there before any of the other beer companies could. So that was kind of a true commercial. It represented what really did happen at the end of Prohibition, but it wasn't funny at all. And then
they need to just use the horses to tell the story. That's when they're the best. That they used all these actors and the guy with the stupid shaving cream on his face who was like, wipe the shaving cream off your face before you drink a beer. God, I think.
And then I thought the best commercial was one that actually was not shown. It was supposed to be by Budweiser, and it was the one with the hockey teams. And if you haven't seen that one, I'll post it a little later on Horses in the Morning. It was a great commercial, and I'm not sure why they didn't show it during the Super Bowl. It was supposed to be. But it was a great commercial. It wasn't funny. It was sort of heartwarming, and it was a flash mob kind of commercial. But it was terrific. I thought it was great. But anyway, that one didn't show up. So we want to hear what was your favorite. And we're going to get to our first guest here in a moment. But first, I need to tell you some exciting news from Omega Alpha. Omega Alpha, Equine Canada, first of all, is the equivalent to the USEF, the United States Equestrian Federation, here. It is the one that controls all their equestrian sports. It's their FEI council up there, Equine Canada. Well, Equine Canada named Omega Alpha Pharmaceuticals the 2011 recipient of the Sponsor of the Year Award at its annual gala. So Omega Alpha was the Sponsor of the Year, and they are, I didn't know this either, I don't know if you did, Janie, but they are the official supplement supplier for the Canadian eventing team, but they also became the official supplement supplier for all of Equine Canada and the Canadian Equestrian Team. So they are now providing all the supplements for the Canadian Equestrian Team as well. So that's very exciting coming into this Olympic year that Omega Alpha. Yeah, what's that?
I mean, because they work. Their supplements are amazing. Amazing.
Well, you can find out more about their amazing supplements and why they're so popular with the Canadian team at OmegaAlpha.ca. Check them out at OmegaAlpha.ca. And congratulations, and they get this. For their award. Good job, Omega Alpha. All right. Let's get to our guest.
Yeah, well, we have Dr. Joanna Norman on the line. And Dr. Norman is a very, very good friend of mine. And I've been trying to get her to come on the show, begging and pleading, but she's, you know, so busy because she is an actual veterinary ophthalmologist. And when you think of a veterinary ophthalmologist, she's she actually specializes, and she's going to give us the kind of brief history, if we can stay focused and not talk about horses all the time, because Dr. Norman actually keeps her horse here at my house, and we are very good friends. We love to ride together, and like I said, I've been begging her to come on the show since the beginning, and I finally got her. She's here. Joanna, are you there?
I hope I don't disappoint. Good morning.
Good morning. No way you can disappoint.
I'm so glad that you all had a good time in Galway despite the trials and tribulations. And I was listening in this morning since we couldn't talk about it on the phone during your busy weekend. But I'm proud that, one, you stayed on. Two, you didn't bail. And then, three, you placed in the top 10. So you should be very proud, really. And just not be disappointed with the fact that Jet has been through so much and you all have carried on and persevered regardless. So good job. I was also disappointed I couldn't watch the game because Jamie and I live out in the country. We call it the country in Waddell, Arizona. And I don't subscribe to cable. We just have rabbit ears. And could you believe that we didn't get NBC? So I couldn't watch the game. I couldn't watch the commercials. I couldn't see Madonna. I was so ready for Madonna. I was bummed. But anyway.
Well, I heard she did good. So, Joanna, here's what will happen, honey. You just come on over here after work today, and we'll just watch everything online because I have internet and cable.
I tried to stream it on the phone even because there's some bills I'm not willing to pay. Anywho, yep, Jamie and I are good friends, and I keep my horse there, Chloe, over at Jamie's place, and my horse is not bipolar, even though she's a mare. And Jamie and I have a good time together. My weekend was very mellow. We just practiced. Last weekend there was a dressage clinic, and Chloe and I just practiced on what we learned, and truly our riding is so much better. I can't wait for you to see it. I'm delighted.
Yay, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, we finally found Joanna a nice, quiet horse, and it turns out to be a chestnut thoroughbred mare. So who knew?
Who knew? Who knew the redhead? But she's been lovely. She's an ex-eventer, and now we do a little bit of just trails and poking around and dressage, and we're getting along splendidly. So thanks for having me. I wanted to teach you all, and particularly your listeners, about the fact that veterinarians also specialize. A lot of my clients have no idea. You know, they don't know until they need us, until their animal needs us. And like physicians, veterinarians may choose to also specialize after vet school. And just to touch on the history, Jamie and I were talking about, well, how many men versus women? And as a whole in veterinary medicine, I believe there's more female practitioners, but the men are still the majority of owners as far as vet medicine as a whole. In my specialty, there are 370 board-certified ophthalmologists in North America. So there's a handful in Canada and only one, I believe, in Mexico, and the rest are in the States. Pretty evenly split, about 190 women and 180 men. So the women take a slight majority. Mm-hmm.
There's only 370 board-certified ophthalmologists in the whole country?
Yeah, in North America.
Wow.
There's not so many of us.
You're a big deal.
And that's
deal.
Why
wow.
we don't see a lot of horses with glasses and contacts.
That's true. And the good news is we don't practice optometry.
Okay.
So we do, in fact, just do ophthalmology. And I have a lot of clients asking if we do, you know, glasses or lenses. And so what we do is the medical and surgical management of diseases of the eye rather than vision correction in the sense of,
I could see our horse speaker wearing the little frame, sitting on his nose. He looks so cute.
Right. This one or this one? You know, when they're switching the lenses and it makes you crazy?
Yeah.
So we do a few contact lenses in the sense of they're bandage lenses. So there are some sort of protective lenses if they have corneal disease that we can use to hasten healing and improve comfort. But we don't do corrective stuff unless we're talking about, say, cataract surgery. And horses, dogs, cats, I mean, anybody, sea lions can have cataracts. And then we can do surgery, of course, and restore vision. But wanted to tell you a little bit about the training, too, that we're not a bunch of quacks. The certifying organization is called the American College of Veterinary Ophthalmologists. And so like the physicians, we do 4 years of undergrad, 4 years of veterinary school, then you get your DVM, of course, your doctorate in veterinary medicine, a year internship, and then a three-year residency in whatever specialty. And there's quite a bit, and you all well know, I'm sure, you know, the internal medicine people, whether large or small animal, the surgeons, they're pretty commonly known. But beyond ophthalmologists, there's dermatologists and oncologists, behavior people. Oh, gosh, I know I'm forgetting some. Pathologists.
It's like, yeah, I mean, and they're like lameness specialists. And all,
yeah, and they would
things.
Be the surgeons. Mm-hmm. They would technically be the surgeons, although I think they're trying to make a sports equine, that is, not in dogs, but an equine sports medicine specialty, which makes sense to me because, say, you're not necessarily the surgeon or maybe you do some minor surgeries, but sports medicine, you wouldn't be cutting colics. You'd be doing leg stuff, you know, and then you might do physical therapy. So I think that's one, and know all about the ultrasounds and shockwaves and all that kind of stuff. So I think that that's coming. But I've seen, mostly see cats and dogs, definitely see the occasional zoo animal and the raptors. There's a lot of birds of prey out here in the desert. But then the horses are the most common species after the dog and the cat. Most horses are sedated, unlike companion animals, because, of course, if they're painful and frightened, that's a recipe for potential disaster. Plus, I can't do my job. You know, the eye is slammed shut. Their eyelids are so powerful. You all have probably seen vets block the eyelid, you know, inject some lidocaine or something similar to stop that in profound muscle squeezing of the eyelids when they can keep them clamped shut. I mean, our hands aren't stronger than the horse's eyelid muscle.
Your equipment is incredibly expensive. So I would imagine that the sedation is part in you're trying to see the eyeball, and the other part is you're trying not to ruin your, you know, $10,000 little headlamp thing.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. The microscope, it's called a slit lamp biomicroscope. It's the same thing when you go to your ophthalmologist and, you know, you have the chin rest, like your head is in that contraption. It's just ours is portable, obviously. And then we look at the front and the back of the eyes. So you're right. You know, it's a few grand for the microscope, a couple grand for the headset. I'm sure my bosses, those beyond me, the owners, wouldn't be pleased if I trashed stuff. But nonetheless, we usually get the job done with just mild, you know, 15 to 20 minute sedation. Usually see the horses. The horses in particular. For ulcers, of course, of the cornea, or that clear windshield of the eye. I'm sure you all are familiar with the cornea. So we usually see them for infected or non-healing ulcers. It's probably the most common time, or the most common chief complaint, I should say. Maybe even corneal perforations, where that wound has gone full thickness, and now you have some of the intraocular content herniated out through that hole. Never good. Mm-hmm. We might also see them for glaucoma, or disease characterized by an increase in intraocular pressure. Maybe you all have talked about on this show equine recurrent uveitis or moon blindness. All brief in theory. But... Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Jamie.
What is that, and why is that so? When I hear that uveitis or moon blindness, I grew up with a POA appy, and everybody always talked about how that could, you know, is it moon blind? So what is that, and why is it so prevalent in the Appaloosas?
Yeah, great question. We're not really exactly quite sure why it's so prevalent, that is, in the Appaloosas. But to start with what it means, equine recurrent uveitis. Uveitis means inflammation inside of the eyeball. And now you can have inflammation from trauma, you know, they were ding-dong in the trailer, they somehow banged their head. But equine recurrent, that's a key word, recurrent, that it keeps coming back. It waxes and it wanes. Inflammation inside of the eye. The term moon blindness came in because people used to think it waxed and waned with the phases of the moon, so it got better or worse at the new moon or the full moon or whatever. I guess at least they noticed that it came and it went. They have periods of quiescence and the eye is comfortable, and then periods of squinting, tearing, even just overt cloudiness that you see with your naked eye. And so it's not fully understood. And in fact, there's two sort of, well, really three kind of variations that may happen. In the States, it's typically anterior uveitis or inflammation in the front half of the eye. In Europe, there's a lot of posterior uveitis or inflammation in the vitreous and the retina, that tissue in the back of the eye. And then the apes and the POAs, and I wonder about that other breed that begins with a K that I don't know how to pronounce, that look like a leopard app. Anyway, the Knobfer. Okay, them. I've never seen one as a patient, and I haven't read in the literature, but it just makes me wonder. But anyway, these horses of color, at least apetypes, can have this chronic, low-grade, insidious uveitis and have it for years. And instead of turning on and off, it just more or less stays on and is just slowly progressive. And the result is not only painfulness, but it can result in blindness. So treatment is warranted. And is it an autoimmune disease? Leptospirosis has been implicated. And frankly, in my opinion, the literature is a bit confusing as to whether it really does or doesn't play a role, the lepto. Is it because they've had some other inflammatory event in the body like laminitis? I mean, I think of uveitis as a laminitis of the eye because all it is simply characterized by inflammation and loss of function. And when it's the foot, you know, profound lameness, sloughing or bad things. When it's the eye, painfulness, loss of vision. So both are inflammatory events. So in other words, was this kicked off by some episode of colic, by laminitis that the horse previously had? So it's not really worked out why in any horse, much less in populations like the Appaloosas, much less the different continental, you know, the States versus Europe, the front versus the back half of the eye. It's a hot topic of research because it certainly leads to, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of dollars of expense and loss of function, say, for an upper-level sport horse or right. a breeding thoroughbred, perhaps.
And that is crazy how, you know, I had no idea that those things kind of communicated because when my horse had the colic surgery, all they kept worrying about was laminitis. And I never even realized that that could be like a uveitis kind of thing, too. It can communicate to that.
Yes.
It sucks. Colic can go to their feet, ruin their feet, and ruin their eyeballs.
It can. And babies. Think of babies. This, you know, neonatal septicemia, so a septic baby, can have this terrible green flocculent ocular media. So they can have this horrid uveitis just because they're affected with rotococcus or staph from an infected, whether it's respiratory or infected umbilical hernia, whatever it might be, they can get a horrible uveitis. So then is it ERU as an adult if it's recurrent? So again, there's so many potential triggers and all of this isn't really figured out. So I also see the horses for trauma. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I know. So when would we come to see you? Why, you know, we call our vet, we see, my horse has something in his eye, he's squinting and all that. When would we come to find an equine ophthalmologist?
I hear you. And it's not, there's no right or wrong answer, because certainly your primary care practitioner, you know, the primary veterinarian, your equine vet who does it all, some of the doctors will just say, hey, if you have a scratch, say, they have an ulcer, or they have pain, and there's not an ulcer, it's just characterized by puffiness and squinting and tearing, say your doc sees them, and then on the second visit it's not resolved, he or she may at that point simply refer to a specialist. Some clients self-refer. So frankly, they're looking for a second opinion. They're not happy with their horse's progress despite the doctor's care. And then sort of the last situation is the one that's the worst, frankly, when maybe they sat on the case too long. And I'm probably going to irritate some people by saying that, but that's the truth. You know, when I was a general practitioner, so I'm not trying to sound like some lofty specialist. I worked in small animal emergency medicine, you know, from midnight to 6 a.m. in the dredges, hit by car, tragic trauma stuff. And there's a point where if your case isn't getting better, whether you're the owner or the veterinarian, in a reasonable amount of time, and whether that's 2 days or 2 months, depending on the amount of the horse's pain, then it's time to get another opinion with someone who specializes in that field. So there's not a clear answer. I guess my point is, say if it's a scratch, an ulcer, and your vet has seen him two or three times, it's time to come see the specialist. A normal ulcer, a normal eye, should heal in 3 to 7 days. So there's a little rule for you. It should heal in about a week. So if we're at the 2-3 week mark, it's time to see a specialist.
Okay. I got a question that everybody at home is thinking about, and I can't believe I'm asking it because I don't like gross stuff, and I don't want any details. No details on this, okay?
Give them details.
So everybody at home, as soon as you said trauma, everybody at home was thinking the same thing I'm thinking, and that is, what is the most unusual thing you found in an eyeball? No details, just the items.
Unusual was a sewing needle, but this wasn't a horse, but it's still interesting. And so the cat had ingested, well, obviously it was in her oral cavity at some point, a sewing needle, and it migrated through the soft palate, went up the orbit, or the socket.
Yeah, I didn't want the detail.
It went through the back of the eye, and so only with an ultrasound, you know, because you can't see it in the front half of the eye is just uncomfortable, filled with pus, what's going on? So we ultrasound it, and there's a sewing needle having penetrated the back of the eye.
Oh my God, are you serious?
And of course we had to remove her eye just because it was a puff bag and blind and irreparably damaged.
I knew I shouldn't have. I shouldn't have asked the question, but I had to. I was just sitting here thinking, everybody at home thinking the same thing. I have to ask for them, but I knew I was going to be grossed out.
Well, for the horse on that head, an interesting foreign body like that. It's more just been really bad trauma where the eye isn't salvageable. And just, you know, I guess a take-home point is remember that the eye is not always forgiving. And so, you know, you don't want to wait too long or you could end up with a blind eye, which stinks. And we all know horses who are blind in one or both eyes. We think of One-Eyed Willie at Jamie's house.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's plenty of horses that can be good companion animals, good trail riding kids. But let's face it, we'd rather have them have two eyes for vision for their safety and ours. So we could end up with a blind eye, or worse, we could end up with, you know, a surgical situation where the eye has to be removed. So if your horse's pain isn't improving, characterized by squinting, cloudiness, you know, swelling, tearing, if those things aren't getting better with the treatment, then maybe it's time for a specialist.
Now, I got to tell, because we got to wrap this up. We're running out of time, and Joanna actually has appointments to go to. So she took some time out of her schedule. But we're going to talk to her again and kind of get a little more detailed on what things look like, what you should do, what should be some treatments. And we're going to talk to her again. I got to say that, remember when I told you guys that my husband bought One-Eyed Willie? We were friends with Dr. Norman, and we went to look at Will, and I said, honey, come on, look at this horse. He goes, you know an ophthalmologist. You can have her fix this. Joanna's thing was, there's nothing that's going to fix this thing, okay?
I appreciate it. Way too far gone, but I appreciate Chad's hopes and dreams.
Confidence in you.
Oh, man. That's funny.
And
stuff.
Next time we talk to you, you'll have to tell the story about how you saved the owl. And first time I ever saw Dr. Norman, she was on the news. So we'll talk about that again. We're going to schedule her again in a couple weeks. Do you mind coming back for us, Joanna?
Oh, no, that'd be great fun. I enjoyed it.
All right. Thank you very much. Give your website out so everybody can come see you.
Oh, sure. Yep, we have locations all around the country. I work here in Avondale, Arizona, but our website is iCareForAnimals.com, and that's E-Y-E careforanimals.com, and you can check out our locations. And we do have a facility in Kentucky as well, if you all need a hand of a specialist. So take care.
All right. Thanks,
thanks.
Dr. Nerd.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Thanks. Bye. She's so smart. It's just amazing.
And I didn't really even know there were specialists. You know, you see your regular vet all the time, and you see specialists for surgeries and stuff, but you don't think about the eyeball unless you really need it, I guess.
You know, when we were talking, remember the horse.com came on a couple of weeks ago and kind of briefly touched on it. They did clarify continuously that whoever it was like, I'm not an ophthalmologist. I'm not an ophthalmologist. And I was thinking, I didn't know that they were so rare to have an ophthalmologist. Only 370 in the country.
Yeah, I didn't realize that either.
Yeah.
And
hey,
I knew I was going to regret asking that question, but you didn't ask it, so I had to do it for the listeners.
I didn't even think to ask it. I wasn't even thinking, what's the weirdest thing you ever found in somebody's eyeball? A sewing needle swallowed that then traveled north up through its brain to its eyeball? Gross. Gross.
Something that's not gross is pocket sable. You know, pocket sable will help. Just like it helped Janie get through her show this weekend, knowing when that farrier was due. And just like it helps everybody else that has downloaded it at pocketstable.com or on your iPhone, it's an iPhone application to help you keep track of when everything is due. You put in your farrier visits, your dentist visits, you put in there all of your shots and all the different things that are due at different times. Because shots, some of them are due 1 year, some are due more years, and you just got to keep track of all that crap, and it's so hard to do. And a lot of people rely on their vet, but then if they move, they don't have the records. It's just an easier way to do it. For $3.99, you download this little application and you have it forever right on your iPhone at pocketstable.com. Well, I was in the mood for a little cowboy today, so let's I did the Bucking Rodeo song on Friday, and that was in your honor, and I really didn't think I was predicting the future. But
thanks for that one. Awesome.
You're welcome. I won't do that again. There's a little cowboy in all of us by Dan Roberts, oldbootsmusic.com.
Hey, Daddy, please help me. I sure need a hand. You see, I'm saddling up, but my pony won't stand. He's backed in the corner and he's kicking the wall. But since Mom moved that toy box, he's a little too tall. With his boots on the wrong feet and his holster tied low. Saddlebag saddle and a blankie bedroll. A little toy rifle he'd made from a broom. He'll ride across the prairie right there in his room. And in his mind he's out driving a herd toward the rail, headed north out of Texas on the old Chisholm Trail. I'd love to ride with him, but that pony might bust. There's a little cowboy in all of us. I said, son, where you headed? He answered, out west. Well, there's word they need riders on the Pony Express. Hey, I might be a scout, Dad, or a sheriff on TV. Any outfit could use a top hand like me. Well, I told him, be careful, don't tie hard and fast. Take a deep seat if you're riding into the past. He said, I'll be back by supper, bedtime at most. He grabbed the reins, pulled his hat down, and he waved adios. In his mind, he's out driving a herd toward the rail, headed north out of Texas on the old Chisholm Trail. I'd love to ride with him, go stir up some There's a little cowboy in all of us. You know, as I stepped from his world back into my own, I thought, we're no different. He might be little and I'm grown, but we both dream about places that neither one of us have ever been. Heck, I'm 4 and 40. I'm still playing pretend. I wish I was out driving a herd for the rail, headed north out of Texas on the old Chisholm Trail. I'll bury my new spurs in the ground till they rust. There's not a little cowboy in all of us. Just a little cowboy in all of us.
The Little Cowboy and All of Us by Dan Roberts at oldbootsmusic.com. You're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenda Geek here with our rodeo expert, Jamie Jennings, riding a little bucking bronco over the weekend. And Coach Jen is over there in the producer chair. And, of course, we're sponsored by OmegaAlpha.ca. Today, OmegaAlpha.ca. Well, I have a Facebook update for you on the favorite commercials of the listeners out there. And we have a little bit of a... We have all over the place, actually. Did you see the Skechers commercial with the dog and the greyhound and the racing on the track? Yeah, that one was kind of cute. Got us all excited. And, of course, Glory, our greyhound, loved that commercial. Thought that was her favorite. She votes for that one. A little bit of greyhound racing there. You don't see very often in commercials. Let's see. What else do we have here? Clint Eastwood commercial. I didn't see that one. I got to watch that one because it was a couple people had that as their favorite. So I'll have to check that one out. Did you see that one? It was for Chrysler, I think, or something.
No, I didn't.
Okay. And Susan Nelson posted a local one we're going to have to watch. It was a local commercial that we're going to have to take a look at. She posted a link to that. Naked M&M's got another vote. The little kids from E-Trade, Rick thought were pretty good. I never got into the little kids from E-Trade. Some people love those commercials. I think those commercials, you either love or hate them.
Oh, my gosh, when he's sitting there and I think the kid's hilarious. I haven't seen this one again. I was driving, so I'm trying to get online and read all of them, but I think the E-Trade kid has always been funny, so I can't wait to watch that one.
All right. See, we disagree on that one, too, but I'll tell you one that a series of commercials that I just don't understand, and I'm probably the only one, and maybe it's because I'm a guy. Jennifer doesn't like them either, though, is the bears, the polar bears for Coke. Anything for me, the polar bears.
When it was Christmas time and they were really slow and they were genuine and they were affectionate towards each other, it was great. This one was stupid. They were just polar bears and they were he was watching the game, and the technology is almost too quick now for the polar bears, and they were they just were kind of unlikable.
Yes, I agree. It's just... And the Canadian commercial, the commercial that I was so excited about that never showed, Glenn Forrester said it was a commercial that actually showed on the Canadian network for the football game, the one with the flash mob. So I did post a link to that on our Facebook page if you want to go check that one out. that one was pretty good. I did like that one. That was not funny at all. It was more serious, but it was actually true. When you watch it, the players, I heard an interview with one of the players, they did not know that this was going to happen at all. They just showed up. They're this little league of hockey players made up of lawyers and doctors, and it's like a rec league, like a recreation league of hockey players. And the two teams were just told, Jamie, that Budweiser was going to come in, and they were filming a documentary on lower league hockey. So the cameras were all set up, and they knew that, but they didn't know what was going to happen after that. You have to see the commercial to see what happened. And apparently it turned out to be an unbelievable overtime game. So they got their 15 minutes of fame on TV there in Canada, thanks to Budweiser. But they did not know about it ahead of time. I love Flash.
Happy to watch.
Maybe it's the actor in me. Just love Flash.
Well, do we have our guest here?
He is going to be here in about 2 seconds. So I think Jennifer is just talking to him at this point. So why don't we just do one news story. I just want to give a congratulations out to Joanne and Hannah Eccles from Great Britain, who did very well at the World Cup vaulting final over the weekend. Joanne managed to beat her sister out for first place in the female side of things and beat her sister Hannah out, who came in second. The reason I'm sort of talking about them and highlighting them is that they were our spotlight team of vaulters for the World Equestrian Games. We followed them and talked to them many times. Two lovely sisters, as nice as could be. They were great in interviews. They did a terrific job here when they were in for the World Equestrian Games, and they're very good right now. They're leading the way in vaulting on the female side, so congratulations to Joanne and Hannah. I just wanted to give them a shout-out today. We're very proud of you guys. Our next guest is ready. We have with us James and Melissa, who are with Carr and Day and Martin, who Jennifer and I, when we had our store years ago, used to sell these products. And the first thing I want to do is say good morning, guys, and welcome to the show.
Hello, are you okay?
Yes, we can hear you. That's great.
Excellent.
And you're from England, right? You're coming from England?
Yes, all the way from England.
Okay, good. Well, the first question I have to ask you guys is we never say your name right over here, by the way. We always say Carday and Martin, and we leave out an and. So I assume that Carday and Martin were three guys who started this company.
Yes, they were,
Okay. So tell us, you know, what is Carday and Martin for those that are not familiar?
Well, basically what it is now is we supply four main sort of categories to the consumer. And those categories are leather, hoof, coat, and healthcare. So we provide a complete range that any consumer can go to their seller and then just pick up a product from us.
Okay. And what kind of products? What do you sell? Give me an example.
So we've got we've got things for sweet itch. We've got shampoos, barriers for the hoofs. We've got all sorts of products, leather, hoof, coat, and healthcare.
I know that we use your products for the leather care side of things, and that's how I became familiar with them. And I think a lot of people in America are familiar with those particular products. Now, you guys are nominated. The reason we're having you on is you're nominated in the Equestrian Social Media Awards in the Best Newcomer category, which means that you have just started delving into social media in the last year. That's category number 16. So tell us, what have you done in social media in the last year that you think you were nominated for this? What cool things are you up to?
It's not even so much the last year. It's actually the last 3 months. So we're quite lucky in that respect to have been nominated. We've only really sort of taken Carr and Day Martin's got quite a big history. It's about 240 years of heritage. So obviously moving into social media is a big thing for us. And with my role, I've come into the company and I've sort of taken over the social media aspect side of things, as well as sort of coordinating the brand's message and stuff in other areas. So we've been dealing with competitions, getting involved with people on Facebook, our fans, our customers. And it's been really great to sort of talk to the people that are buying our products and getting involved with us on the online medium.
Now, Melissa, is it tough to drag a company that's 240 years old into the new age?
Sorry, what was that?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought Melissa was on here with us. I was saying, is it tough?
I'll just pass her over. I'll pass her over because we're on the headset.
All right, that's all right. Don't worry about it. I was just wondering, is it tough? You said the company's 240 years old. Is it tough to drag a company that's 240 years old into new media?
I don't think it's particularly tough because obviously it's the way that everyone's sort of communicating nowadays. So everyone's really keen to interact with us through social media. It's certainly important to us that we do sort of keep our heritage. We're very proud of our heritage. Obviously, we've been manufacturing in the UK since 1765, so that's very important to us, but we are as well keen to sort of put a modern twist on things as well.
I know one of the very popular products that you guys have over here is the Belvoir leather product. I don't know if I'm saying that right.
That's one of the ones that is
very popular. Jamie, do you use that? Do you use that product?
Oh, my gosh. Let me just tell you, that is what I use all the time. It comes in like an orange tub, and it has its own little applicator. And when I was at the horse trial, my friend Christine was like, "Do you have any leather conditioner?" And I said, "Oh, my God, I have the best stuff ever." So she took the container and took it back to her trailer to clean her bridle. And then she brought it back to me, and she goes, oh, my God, that is the best stuff. I totally used it on all of my furniture inside the trailer. I used it on my mother's purse, and then I used it also on my bridle. And I was like, yeah, I look in, like, half of it's gone. I'm like, Christine.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very popular product, that one. We do have quite a lot of people that use it on furniture and shoes, so it's not just horsey people. There's all sorts of people do use that product.
Yeah, it's really popular. That and the mane and tail that you guys use,
It
comes like in a white bottle and it's got a pink thing. That is an amazing product. And also the new shampoos that you guys have. Tell us about those.
Well,
maybe
we've
it's
got
just new packaging.
Yeah, well, it's new formulations. We've got our Gallop conditioning shampoo, which is designed for everyday use, and it's they've got low foam formulations. So a lot of people think that the more that a shampoo sort of throttles up when you're using it, the better the shampoo is. But actually, it's the foam is an added ingredient. So ours are designed to be easy to use in that they take minimal rinsing, basically. And we've also got a range of colour shampoos as well, which enhance the natural colour of the horse's coat, which are great. We've had, you know, lots of good feedback about those.
Yeah, they're
awesome.
Very cool. They're color-enhancing shampoos, and they come like, I'm assuming they don't color-enhance the color that the horse, because they come in black, blue, yellow, and red.
They're designed to work with the reflecting certain shades of light, basically. They don't actually dye the horse's coat. They just sort of bring out the best natural color possible, basically.
Right. It was very popular with the eventers. I became familiar with this weekend, actually. So you guys are definitely making your way pretty heavy into the United States market, especially with the, I mean, just the stuff that I use, I know about. But I'm looking here at your website, and there is just fantastic product after fantastic product. And like you said, it's time-tested, really. I mean, y'all have been around for over 200 years.
That's right, yes, that's right. A lot of the formulations are the original recipes as well, so they haven't really been changed because they just, you know, they do the job so well, really.
I bet you, Jamie, that these products were used on Black Beauty. Was it mentioned in the book? I don't remember.
I bet they were, yeah. Definitely the Gallop color would bring out the black shine in his mane, and it had to polish his harness, his taxicab harness with the Cardin
right.
Martin part at Paul Belvoir. So, yeah, I'm sure, Glenn.
Well, vote for Carr and Day and Martin. If you don't mind, in the United States, that's just too many ands for us. We're just going to do Carr, Day, and Martin, which is what we've always done. So,
yeah, that's fine.
Okay, but if you want to look them up, it's carrdaymartin.co.uk, or if you're looking on Facebook, unfortunately you have to put all the ands in, so it's Carr and Day and Martin. But you'll find all of their new media stuff linked off their Facebook page there as well. Good luck, guys. Go vote. If you haven't voted yet, vote for them in the best newcomer category, #16. And while you're there, vote for us in the best broadcast media category. We're at category 19, so give us a vote while you're there as well. Thank you very much for being on. We appreciate it. We appreciate it, James and Melissa.
Thank you very much.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, I think we just lost Jamie there, but Jennifer, he sounded like Liam.
Yes.
Sounded so much like Liam. I thought, oh, my God, I was talking to Liam. I thought you got the wrong person on the phone.
Actually, that was Liam. He was portraying the part of James because we were having trouble with the connection.
Oh, is that what you did? Okay. And Melissa sounded like our friend Lindsay.
Yes,
sounded
Lindsay.
So much.
The part of her was played by Lindsay. You were absolutely correct. It was
all
a word
right,
with
you.
I'm bet you hung up on me.
No, you just went away. I didn't do it at all. I didn't hang up on you at all. I accidentally.
You are lying right now.
I was just saying to Jennifer that he sounded so much like Liam. I thought Liam was on the phone.
Oh, I know. They both sounded lovely, absolutely lovely. But you're right, man. I didn't realize that when you had them coming on that those are the products. They have the best products. And you pay for them, but they're the best.
Yep.
Now I know why. They're important.
They're not the cheapest, but it's good stuff. Hey, they've been making it for 200 years. They know how to do it. Let's get to our news of the weekend.
It's time for the weekend roundup.
Well, you talked me into it.
You know, the War Horse movie was out, Jamie, and we talked a lot about it, and there's a lot of stories coming out now of, you know, some things that happened back in World War One, especially in England, that closely relate to the story of the little boy and his horse being taken away for war. And one of those stories that came out over the weekend was a note from Frieda Hewlett to Lord Kitchener, who was the Secretary of State for War during World War One, and it was a letter that's being put in a museum exhibit, and I wanted to read the letter to you. Now, this is coming from this little girl. It was handwritten letter. Well, that's all they had back then. August 11th, 1914, it was put on paper that had the family's name. It said The Cottage in Hague, Wigan, and it reads, Dear Good Lord Kitchener, we are writing for our pony, which we are very afraid may be taken for your army. Please spare her. Daddy said she is going to be a mother early next year, and she is 17 years old. It would break our hearts to let her go. We have given two others, and three of our family are now fighting for you in the Navy. Mother and all will do anything for you, but do not take old Betty. Your troubled little Britishers, P.L. and Frieda Hewlett. This is a family that gave up two of their three horses and had many members of their family fighting in the war. And here they had their final pony, and they were trying to make sure that their final pony did not go to war. She got a response, and there's pictures of that as well in this article. She got a response from the War Department, and it said that no horse measuring under 15 hands will be taken from anyone. And they assume, there's no results to this, but they assume that this pony was not taken because it was too small. But what a story, huh?
Oh, my gosh. To lose, you know, and not that they were lost, but to lose sons and brothers and children and then, you know, to lose all your livestock and your horses that are friends, I mean, to a little girl, please don't take my pony. Oh, just about makes you cry. What a great story, and what a good person to write back to these little girls and say, we won't take your pony. Oh, so
and you see
sad.
That? I put a picture of the pony in the show notes. Do you see the picture of the pony there?
Yeah, it's so cute.
Very healthy pony.
Yeah, fat pony. Well, what a good story. Well, at least something good came out of it. So War Horse is potentially true. See, I told you. It's a great story. Great movie. So, do you have, Glenn, do you and Jennifer have your retirement plan set up? Are you guys ready?
Oh, yeah, just like everybody else. Not so much.
Okay, so you haven't done the...
Jamie, you are our retirement plan, and that is scary.
Jennifer just typed in, yes, our retirement plan is Powerball. Awesome. I remembered. I bought a ticket on Friday. I didn't even check it. All right. So I'm gonna help you with your retirement plans. Okay. There is now. It is in the planning stages, and so by the time you're ready to retire, this sucker will be up and running and ready to accept you with open arms. It is going to be the first over 50s equestrian village in France. The Village Group hopes that the project will capitalize on the growing number of older Brits moving across the English Channel for a life in the southwest of France. So you will be able to discover the real France, wooded hillsides, winding rivers, scenic farmlands, much of which will be discovered on horseback. Your horses, because you will be living in a equestrian village for people that are over 50. If you're 49, you can't go. If you're 48, sorry, but if you're 50, you're in. You're in! The main activity will be horseback riding in this village, but residents will also be able to cycle, canoe, play golf, go caving, because 50-plus love to go spelunking, hot air ballooning, and even hang gliding and fishing are going to be part of this equestrian community. What spooks a horse more than hang gliders and hot air balloons landing air on the golf course?
And holes in the ground.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. The company has plans for active living resorts in southwest France, four separate ones. So you can try to get into one of four equestrian villages. Again, horseback riding, hot air ballooning, and hang gliding. They all go so well together, don't they? Did I sell it?
Hey, you did. You sold it really well. As a matter of fact, I'm ready to move. And, you know, April 24th, I'll be 50. We can move then, Jennifer. We can go to the south of France. You know, as long as they have the internet, we can do the show. Well, apparently not. It doesn't work so well. But we can try to. So have to find
hold
a host in France.
Up.
Yeah.
Hold up. Did you say that on April 24th, you're going to be 50?
That is correct.
Like of this year?
Yes.
And, like, that's, like, 2 days before I get in town?
That is correct, yes.
Oh, my God, you're in trouble now. Shots for everybody! 50 years old when I'm there! Oh, my God, it couldn't be any better than this. I am starting to plan the party now. Jennifer, you call me after the show. We will get everything booked. We are having a 50th for Glenn. It may be cheap, but it will be fun. Vodka and tequila for everyone.
You give me vodka and tequila, I won't make it to 51.
You're not supposed to remember your 50th. Oh, my God, you're going to be 50? I didn't know how old you were. See, you learn something new every day. The party is on.
I know. I look so much younger with my gray beard. Just look so much younger.
Yeah, I thought you were like 70. So, man, this is awesome.
Hey, there's somebody else that's about my age, actually a little bit younger, that just made history over the weekend. And you're going to hear his name. Everybody that listens to any of our shows and knows a little bit about carriage driving in the United States knows the name Chester Weber. Chester Weber's out of Ocala, Florida, owns about 67,000 acres down there, and comes from the Campbell family. Well, there's another name that's making history over in Europe right now, and I got to meet this guy and his little son. He is like a five-year-old son during the World Equestrian Games. They were just hanging out. I happened to be sitting beside him. We got chatting. His name is Boyd Excel, and he is from Australia. And he made history winning the FEI World Cup driving final for the fourth consecutive time. He was against some of the top names in the world. Some of the top names in driving are Isbrand Chardin and Koos de Rond. And some people know Isbrand Chardin's name, because he was the one that had the carriage that was vandalized during the World Equestrian Games. Did you hear about that during the games, Jamie?
No.
Yeah, during the competition phase, for the drivers, they had all the carriages parked in a secure area with guards and everything. Well, he came out, and he was leading the way after dressage. He came out the next morning to get his carriage, and somebody had vandalized it. They cut the seats. They cut the brake lines. They carved things into the carriage. They basically just trashed his carriage. So there was a police investigation. It was the most excitement we had during the World Equestrian Games. That wasn't a competition, because the police came in. The state police were there. There were all kinds of investigations. And
that's
they never
like
did
Tanya.
Figure...
That's as dramatic
Harding.
As Tanya Harding coming in and busting Nancy Kerrigan in the knee right before the Olympics.
I know, and it could have been bad. If they hadn't totally trashed it and they just cut the brake lines, it could have been bad, you know. But they had totally trashed it, so the brake lines being cut were just was something else of the whole pile. But he did well, and he is the name that's going to be heard in driving for years to come. And my comment on that is he's a super nice guy, and he has little kids, and they travel with him a lot, and he's just a neat guy. Just like I like Boyd XL. So congratulations to Boyd.
Boyd XL? That's like Boyd Martin and Feed XL all put together. That's awesome.
You could look at it that way.
What's so funny? I totally think that's the way it is.
And Black Caviar is going to be coming up soon, huh? She's going to be making the comeback.
All right. For those who can translate this, 60 kilograms, how much does that weigh? Because apparently they haven't locked it in, but the mare is going to carry at least 60 kilograms in her next race. And the way that this article is saying it that I found online, Glenn, is that 60 kilograms sounds like an awful lot. They
132 pounds, by the way.
Oh, my God. That's very heavy. That is really heavy for a horse to carry. Holy smokes. Maybe sprinters carry more weight. I don't know. But that's a big anchor for a mare to carry on. So Black Caviar is running this Saturday, I believe, and it's going to be at Caulfield. And she's doing 1,200 meters. And apparently, not only is she carrying a heck of a lot more weight than she's carried before, it'll be more than she is carrying, more than anybody in the field is carrying, and they stepped up the class of race. So this could be a very big, big race. I mean, what is she, 17 and 17 right now? So
yeah, I think she's set. That's right. I think she's won 17 in a row.
17 in a row for a sprinter. Oh, amazing.
Yep. So that's coming up. Well, I don't know. Is there any more news here that we needed to cover for the weekend?
That's pretty much it. But I do want to, again, thank you for letting me broadcast live from a horse show and compete. And we did make some plans potentially to, we were all drinking and we decided that we are all going to be going to compete up in Montana this year. There's a big show in Montana. So I will be hopefully asking for a little bit of time to maybe broadcast from Montana.
In addition to the 2 weeks that you're going to Spain?
Yes. In addition to that. We'll talk. We'll
you
talk
might have
about
to do
it.
Some,
we'll
if
talk.
You're going to Montana, I think I know what show you're going to be going to. You might have to do some reports for Chris, too, for the eventing radio show.
I can do it. Well, maybe Chris should come with me.
Oh, there you go. That'd be an idea. You guys could do the show from Montana. Now, that is
and
supposed
remember,
to be an absolutely beautiful venue.
Yes, we decided. It's at Rebecca Farms in Montana,
yep.
And all of us over drinks. I believe it's July 12th through the 15th, and what time to get out, better time to get out of Phoenix, Arizona than in July. So I think that you may have to give me some time off, or I will just broadcast live from Rebecca Farm. We'll start talking to them, see if we can make it work.
Yeah, Rebecca Farms is when you get the East Coasters go out there, the West Coasters go there, it's sort of in the middle of the country, and everybody says the same thing. It's one of their favorite events. It's so beautiful. And the neat thing about Rebecca Farms, the way it's set up, is for cross-country, you know how those that have gone out and tried to watch cross-country in an event before, you end up seeing two jumps because of the hills and trees and everything. You just can't see a lot. Well, Rebecca Farms, the cross-country course is like in this big open kind of field. So you can see a lot of the cross-country jumps from wherever you are. So that's kind of neat, the way they set it up.
Yes. So so you're in. You're okay with this. Awesome. Woohoo! I'm going.
No racetrack involved, by the way, at Rebecca Farms. There is no racetrack, so you should be fine.
It looks beautiful. I must say that Galway Downs was very spectator-friendly, too. Chad actually saw my entire ride. He said it was the most fun he's had at any horse trial yet. So Galway Downs is ranking up at number one for him. And I did see Robert Kellerhouse, the guy who stood us up all weekend, and he never said one word to me. He just waved.
Because you were terrorizing his horse trials.
Because I was that guy.
You, the insurance company saw you coming, and they raised the rates.
Yeah. Sorry about that, guys. But, well, good time. We're out of time. Thanks to Dr. Norman for joining us and everybody at Carr and Day and Martin for coming on the show. And, Glenn, yeah, I'm going to go back to bed now.
All right. Get some sleep. Recover. We'll talk to you again tomorrow morning. We'll be back live at 9 a.m. Don't forget to get your really bad ads into Jennifer for Friday. It's back this week. I found a great one. Wait till you hear the one I found on Friday, Jamie. It was terrific. All right.
Cannot
we'll be back.
Wait.
All right.
Bay, neuter, and
geld.
Bay, neuter, and geld. Please.
I guess you didn't have to worry about shortening your reins in stadium, did you?
I was holding its ears. They were so short.